Welcome to Food Farms and Chefs Radio Show, where we highlight everyone from the top industry leaders to startups and farmers that make it all possible with Chef Jean Blum and photojournalist Amaris Pollock.
Recording in progress.
Hi, and welcome back to Food Farms and Chefs. And I'm very excited to introduce all of our listeners to Mohammed Aklan, who is the executive chef and owner of Maluga Restaurant and Catering, which is in Old City, Philadelphia. Mohammed, thank you for joining us on Food Farms and Chefs.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me today.
No problem. So I know I love food, Jean loves food, and I know that we both kind of highly enjoy tasting and experiencing different flavors, different cultures and cuisines. So I want to kind of just start off with the fact that, you know, you're not originally from this country and you came here in, I believe you said 2014?
Yes. So I came to the U.S. in 2014 as a student. So I was doing, aviation engineering when I came to New York City. And it was all by an accident going into the food industry. Yeah, I was looking for a job while I was a student. So I worked in a restaurant. And for some reasons, the chef didn't show up. So that restaurant was my cousin's restaurant. So he know that I love to cook, or I love cooking. So I grew up, just to let you know, I grew up with my grandma cooking since I was 12. So he said, would you mind helping me today? I said, okay, let me try. It was basic. It was shawarma's falafel in Boston, actually. So I tried, and then I said, you know what? I kind of love this. Let me focus on this. So I have one more year in college. I stopped it, and I went to food industry.
And that is a vast difference of between engineering and food. I mean, there is a math and an art to both, but there is definitely a difference between the two.
Yes, they are. But trust me, I don't know why, but there is some physics in both of them.
Well, yes, you certainly get the science part of it, in understanding how things work and the cooking aspect of it and all that. But, you know, it's such a creative and variable world, too. So it is an interesting transition. I mean, I'm very blessed. I also love the science aspect of cooking and all, but you know, it is such a creative different skill set as well. So, you know, it's not a change that everybody can make, but you obviously were very successful at it, and you know, God bless you on that one. It's a tough transition for a lot of people.
Thank you. So yeah, after that I said, you know what, let me go in and to see more about food industry. I used to cook, but I wasn't a chef before. I don't know how restaurants work. So at that day, when I decided to open a restaurant, I started from home. I called my grandma. I took all her recipes and I started from there. And I was surprised, like, how people like the food. I said, and I have that problem that I taste the food, I'd be like, oh, it's missing something. Let me add something. And people really love it. So since that day, I started.
Now, you, before we actually hopped on, you and I started going into the differences between your cuisine, your culture's cuisine, and others that are, you know, kind of use some of the same flavors, but it definitely, there's a distinguishment between the different cuisines and cultures. So what distinguishes, you know, your grandmother's recipes that you love so much from other cuisines that are out there?
So I grew up just like I told you, I grew up with my grandma having all that food since I was a kid. So our different but other cuisines, we don't use a lot of spices. And if we think about it, like Indian cuisine has a lot of Indian recipes. I mean, spices. We do have similar, like we use a curry, we use the cumin, but not much. And we focus on slow cooking food. So we have this lamb honey dish. It's actually the best seller in our menu. So it's lamb marinated for 24 hours and it's cooked for 6 to 7 hours.
Which I'm sure uses, like, creates a tenderness and really, like, a nice flavor.
Yes, yes, yes. So people really like that dish. And, of course, I did a small twist to it. And yeah, we have a lot of other stuff in the menu.
So what are the primary proteins do you focus on in your restaurant? Obviously lamb, which is a big one with me. What are the other primary proteins? I'm thinking not a lot of beef, but I could be very wrong on that one.
So, yeah. So in the Yemeni cuisine, we focus more about lamb and chicken. And we have big varieties of vegan food. So back in Yemen, yeah, because back in Yemen, people... they can't afford having meat or protein much. So that's why we do have a lot of vegan dishes in our menu, in our cuisine.
Okay. That's very, and well, dairy is not a real popular thing in Yemen, I'm assuming, you know, because of temperature, because of a lot of different things. Historically, you know, cow's milk is not something, or dairy is not something you would see a lot of, but you know, the total vegan concept. So a lot of rice and roasted vegetables and stuff. So now when you translate that here to your restaurant, are you struggling to find particular spices or ingredients or anything like that? Or did you have to adapt your recipes to fit the products that are here and you know, readily available?
So actually what I do have spices come overseas every like 4 months, but it's raw spices. So I'd be like roasting them and grind them from time to time. So yeah, most of our spices, and especially we have something called fenugreek. We use it in most of our dishes. This has come directly from Yemen.
Yes, I know the spice. I actually love it. I have some here. Not necessarily easy to find, but, you know, it's a great spice. And what you do find here commercially available is oftentimes just a very weak version of it. So when you can get a good quality one, and it's just a really a joy to work with.
Yes, yes, yes. But, of course, we do have a lot of stuff coming from here because we can't depend on having spices and most of the stuff from Yemen because it's hard. You know that.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
So I know that, you know, I delve into the Middle Eastern cuisines kind of often, and I know I love a good falafel sandwich, which I know that's the Americanized version of sandwiches is different than a Middle Eastern. So I just want to distinguish for our listeners out there that when you get a Middle Eastern sandwich, it's actually a wrap. It's wrapped in, I believe, a pita of some sort.
Yes, yes. So my idea about falafel, that's funny. I'd be telling all my customers, falafels in everywhere, it's delicious. But you have to have it fresh. That's the key of great falafels. So I don't mind having different recipes on falafel, but let's say if it is fresh, that would be great. So we use pita bread for it. And of course, tahini, the tahini sauce. And we do the twist in our falafel that we do mint in the sandwich. Mint leaf.
Which, I mean, mint is a nice flavor as long as it's not overpowering.
Oh, it's not. It's not. It's just some leaves in there.
I am curious, though, because I feel like I've had numerous falafel sandwiches where they incorporate fries into it. Have you ever put the French fries inside of it? I see that smile.
I'm not a big fan of fries in a sandwich, to be honest.
Okay. Because I'm like, I like having fries, but I like having it separate. So I'm like you. I don't like having, like, taking a bite and at the end, like, you catch a fry and you're like, what?
Yeah, what's that? Is it a falafel or a fry sandwich?
Yeah. And I know that you have something that I absolutely love is you have stuffed grape leaves as well on your menu.
Oh, yeah. So stuffed grape leaves, it's hard to be made, to be honest. Because it takes too long time to be done. But it's actually grape leaves stuffed with rice. And in some other cuisines, they stuff it with rice and meat, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
eat it cold.
Yeah. So what are some of the other menu items that you have that are more popular?
So in our menu, we have the most popular dishes for... Started from the appetizers, you have the hummus shawarma. So it's actually hummus with chicken shawarma on top. And we have new coming dishes. It's actually hummus with lamb and hummus with falafel. And of course, the plain hummus. And that's for appetizer. And for the main dishes, we have the best seller. We have the lamb hanit. The one I told you about is the lamb cooking for 7 hours. And you have the chicken mandis. It's half a chicken cooking for 3 hours. It's so tender. Come with rice, saffron, and raisins and nuts. And for other vegetarian dishes, you have something called salta. So salta is a stew, potatoes, okra, and whipped fenugreek on top of that. And it's served in a sizzling pot.
Nice.
And you have to try our dessert. You have something called sizzling arica. And it's not cold. It's sizzling hot. And it's a dessert. So it's dates with bread, with table cream, honey, and flax seeds.
So what are the primary beverages then that go along with that? Like in Indian cuisine, we have lassis. What are the beverages that are significant to, you know, Yemen cuisine? Besides, I'm assuming tea, but besides the tea.
Yeah. So actually, let me tell you something about coffee. We do a lot of coffee in Yemeni cuisine. If you know mocha, mocha coffee, it's actually mocha. It's a place in Yemen called mocha.
Okay.
So we have our coffee from Yemen. We have the Yemeni latte. It's coffee with milk. And you have the Yemeni tea with cinnamon and cardamom and all and mint. And you have the iced adani. It's you have the hot adani and the iced adani. It's actually tea with milk with our spices, Yemeni spices. And we have lemonade, mint lemonade. It's iced one.
Let me jump in for 1 second because I do know that a lot of the, and you mentioned it, you referenced the madra. What is that? Because a lot of your dishes, it seems like on your menu are utilize that. So our listeners who are out there that don't know what it is, or, you know, I actually am not familiar enough with it. Can you go over what that is?
So madra is, it's a black stone pot we cook in it. So we serve food in that, so to keep the heat temperature hot.
So yeah. Is it kind of like a volcanic stone where it holds?
Exactly.
Yeah. So yes. It like holds and maintains that heat when you're in. Do you put that in the oven or can you like put it in the fire?
At first, we have to put it in the oven, and then just to keep the heat, we put it on the stove. And I think that who used this madara thing, the same as our culture, is the Korean cuisine.
I have seen that in Korean cuisines as well. And I do know one sushi place that utilizes it too. So it's interesting that, you know, that you utilize that in your cooking as well. And I'm wondering, you know, do you keep it seasoned? Because I know like with woks and and whatnot, you have to keep them seasoned.
So, yeah. So we start with that. We have to season it. We have to put it in the oven for 24 hours before you start cooking with that. I mean, that's one time thing you have to do after you buy that. And we used to, that remind me, we used to do in Yemen. So we heat it up and we have that on the serving table and we cook on the table, not on the stove.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yes.
Well, I highly appreciate all different kinds of versions of cooking and cuisine and cultures, and as I'm sure that Gene does as well. And I know that. Well, oh, sorry.
One of the questions I have, just because of regional and things like that, like, you know, when I talk about olive oils, because I'm a huge fan of olive oils, and you know, I know that it's still something there that is a prominent item. And, you know, if you go to Italy, most restaurants actually use a Spanish olive oil. And most Italian olive oils are shipped out of the country to America where they get a better price for it. Is there a particular flavor or style of olive oil that is used in Yemeni cuisine?
So the sad thing that Yemeni cuisine don't have olive oil. So we use a lot of ghee.
Oh, okay. Wonderful.
Yes. But since I have, and that happened last year, my sous chef is Italian. So he introduced me to Italian olive oil. That's why we changed. I mean, we have olive oil from Italy for now. We use it on hummus. Yeah.
Okay. Amorous?
Well, I am so appreciative of the fact that you joined us on Food Forums and Chefs. And for anybody who is looking to visit your store, to visit you in person and try out your foods, where can they find you online and in person?
So thank you. And you are most welcome to come to the restaurant. It's actually in 134 Chestnut Street in Philadelphia, Old City. And of course, you can always go in to our website, malugacatering.com, or Maluga Catering in Instagram and TikTok.
I did see that you have a TikTok. So
yes, it's actually been so viral. We've been so viral on TikTok.
Well, which is a good thing, because that'll bring foot traffic. So
yes, trust me, Philadelphia community, they've been so helpful. We thank them so much. They helped us a lot.
That's wonderful to hear. And hopefully our listeners will stop in and try out your food.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
Thank you
for having me today.
Thank you. And we will be right back after this short break.
To become a sponsor of Food Forums and Chefs and have your business or event promoted on two radio stations in Philadelphia that play on Tuesdays during Drive Time Radio and on a station in New York on Fridays at 1 p.m., you can email us at foodfarmsandchefs@yahoo.com, ibfoodie2@yahoo.com, or arpolicus@gmail.com.
Everyone, it's Amaris Pollock
and Gene Blum
here from Food Farms and Chefs. We wanted to wish you a wonderful holiday season, and if you're looking for a delicious way to celebrate, you can tune in to Food Farms and Chefs on WWDB at 6 p.m. on Tuesdays.
Hi, everyone. So welcome back from our break. And I just want to say a very happy Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah. And we are continuing our celebrations this time around the globe. And Gene, why don't you kick us off?
Well, as we talk about different celebrations from places around the world, and just skip a little bit of the food and just talk about some other kind of interesting and strange traditions at Christmas. So one of my favorites, and for all those, you know, I grew up being told that I was going to get coal in my stocking if I was a bad young man. But in Iceland, they have the kind of 13 days of Christmas, and they call it the 13 Yule Lads. But every night, night, the kids place their shoes by the window, and then they go up to bed. And in the morning, they come down, and either in their shoes, there is candy if they've been good, but rotting potatoes if they were not so good. You know, make a call seem like a whole better world there, because I will take that over rotting potatoes anytime. Michelle, you skip up just a short amount of time or distance. You go to Finland, they start off the holiday with like a warm porridge. It's kind of a warm rice pudding made with milk and butter and cinnamon. And then they put an almond in, a whole almond. And the person who buys the almond wins. If you have multiple kids, you probably put several almonds in so nobody feels left out or whatever. But my favorite thing about what they do is in the evening, they have a family sauna where they all kind of get in and have a sauna together on Christmas night, you know, like just a little bizarre tradition, but hey, you know, what works. So, you know, some of the interesting things that you do or know about?
Well, I'm more of a stateside kind of gal for information that I'm offering up. But one of the things that I found out was there's an actual town in Indiana that's called Santa Claus. So Santa Claus, Indiana, celebrates Christmas, obviously, in a big way. And the whole town celebrates during the month of December, starting in November, like from Thanksgiving on to about January. But they have everything under the sun that you can do. They have light festivals. They have a Santa Polar Express that, you know, is a stationary train. So it doesn't actually move, but you can go on it and, you know, greet Santa, take pictures. You can have milk and cookies with Santa. There's other treats that you can have while you're doing that. And there's activities up the wazoo that you can do that are family friendly, along with some of the stuff that they actually do is they physically roast chestnuts over an open fire, which I know that it's in the song and I know it used to be a holiday tradition a long time ago, but I didn't know that there's actually like, you know, individuals who still do that. I thought that that's just like, you know, you go to a store and you get chestnuts that are already, you know, ready to eat, or you crack open a chestnut at home and like use it to bake something. But no, you actually get to go to Santa Claus, Indiana, which still boggles my mind that there's a Santa Claus, Indiana, to celebrate the holidays at.
So are you saying you don't have a chestnut roaster at home?
I do not. I don't have a chestnut. No one at our house roasts chestnuts. And I mean, I know that you can do it in a saucepan that you know, don't care so much about, but like, or not a saucepan, a frying pan. But I've never actually physically done that. Have you done that, Gene?
I have. I actually have a chestnut roaster. It's a kind of a, it's a closed, it looks like something you would put in the fire. It is something you would put in the fireplace. It's all long handle, and you put the chestnuts in it, and then you close the lid, and they go in there, and they roast that way. I could do it in my fireplace at home.
That's very cool.
I have done it. Not something I do as a tradition, but yes, I've done it. So you know, one of the weird things I came across, you know, many years ago, reading stories about traditions and stuff, that was kind of a little weird. So in Austria, around December 6th, so the feast of St. Nicholas, which is, you know, right around December 6th, Austria, they have the story of like a devil-like creature that's called Krampus. And, you know, kids on the feast of St. Nicholas are asked whether they, you know, to produce a list of good deeds and bad deeds that they've done for the summer or for the year. And if the good deeds outnumber the bad deeds, they receive, you know, gingerbread cookies or sweets and things like that. But if they're bad, they don't receive anything, and they're left to think about what Krampus may bring them. I thought Christmas was supposed to be a bright, cheery time.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely is supposed to.
Yeah. So I don't know. Very, very interesting. So what else have you discovered in your traveling through?
I mean, we have limited time, so I'm going to try to actually go on the big ones. In Colorado Springs, there is a place called the Madrigal Banquet at Glen Eyrie Castle. And if you want to speak about, like, holiday celebrations, you know, what's more iconic than seeing a bunch of snow surrounding a castle that was, you know, born out of the 16th century? But annually, they have a Christmas celebration where not only can you dress up in, you know, Renaissance style fare if you so choose, all of the servers and there's performers that bring out on big, huge trays, parading through the crowds who are, you know, seated for this four-course dinner celebration, where there's performances where people sing during it. There's a jester. Like, it's almost like you get enveloped in, you know, the olden days. But obviously, it's a current, you know, our current years. But, you know, it's a huge celebration that they have every single year. Four-course dinner, huge trays of, like, I mean, fully roasted meats, like, all of your sides are brought out on large trays. But, I mean, the exquisite nature of this particular celebration, like, if you go online and Google it, you will see the most fantastic experience that you probably could have during the holidays, but it's in Colorado Springs, like in a picturesque castle.
Well, Colorado Springs is a great place to be any time of year, but I think that's something worth looking at. So, you know, we talk about different things. We got to remember it, and, you know, it's easy to forget because we all relate to what we're living in and what's going on and things like that. But in New Zealand, you know, it's the heart of the summertime for Christmas. So it literally is Christmas in July there. So in New Zealand, they celebrate Christmas with big beach barbecues with, you know, fresh fish and shellfish and vegetables and meats. And, you know, they head to the beach and have a big barbecue and just really, you know, enjoy that. And their Christmas tree is actually a tree that has these big, you know, it's a big tree. It has all these red, colorful blooms, you know, that is it provides shade and stuff like that. And it provides that red color and the blooms in the summertime. So that is their Christmas tree in New Zealand as well. But yeah, you know, what's the idea about, like, you know, you go and celebrate at a barbecue. I guess we do that in Hawaii too.
I mean, I would love to celebrate that way, like, especially because if it's incorporating something so significant, because what's more iconic than Christmas trees, having something like that also in addition to, you know, celebrating with your feast. Like, I think that's a huge, you know, significance for celebrating. But I mean, our time flies by so really quick. You know, I want to also add in the fact that there is a town inside of Georgia that literally, because everybody loves Hallmark Channel movies, literally this town is so picturesque that Hallmark went and filmed in it. And I'm probably going to get mail, like, referring to how I'm pronouncing this, but Dahlonega, Georgia, is a place in that celebrates Christmas in a big way, too, because they have Festival of Lights, they have carriage rides, they have specific food truck events, they even have mulled wine weekends. That is a town that knows how to have fun and knows how to celebrate.
Well, I would be, you know, out of place if I didn't mention my day tomorrow going up, you know, tradition my wife and I have. So we'll be taking the train up tomorrow. We see the Rockettes, for a 2 o'clock show. We then go to Macy's And Macy's has this fabulous restaurant on, I don't want to say around the seventh floor, but it's a great open air restaurant. And the backdrop is, you know, the Empire State Building. But before we get to Macy's, we kind of do Rockefeller Square, see the tree. And of course, you got to see, you know, the store windows at the big department stores. But then we go and we spend the hour in Sandland at Macy's after dinner before we get to Good Santa and get our picture taken. And ladies and gentlemen, if you've never been to Sandland in Macy's, New York City, and everybody who knows I'm a Philadelphia person, so I'm giving New York a shout out here. There is no better Santa and no better Santa Land than Macy's in New York. Well worth the trip. Get it done.
I was going to say, I agree. I totally agree. I've been there. It's a lot of fun. There's multiple layers. Like, every floor has something. So you can tour Macy's on every floor, which is amazing and astounding. And then go to FAO Schwartz and see what's going on there, too, because that's a lot of fun for anybody who has kids. Or if you're an adult with a childlike heart, there's a love of toys there.
Join us on Food Farms and Chefs radio show, where we highlight everyone from top industry leaders to startups and the farmers who make it all possible with co-host Jean Blum and Amaris Pollock, with original episodes that debut every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on WWDB 97.5 HD2 and at WWDBAM.com and on your smart speaker.
Hi, and welcome back to Food Farms and Chefs. And I'm very excited to introduce all of you to Brian Smith and Eric Mayhew, who are the co-owners of Doghouse Grill. Welcome to Food Farms and Chefs.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
No problem. Now, I know, Brian, that you have a history in the culinary field. You went to school to Johnson & Wales. I do not know Eric's history within the culinary community.
I really don't have one besides working in the culinary industry in coffee shops and various food places in high school and college and stuff like that. I'm more business mindseted, trade oriented, so I can pretty much fix and design anything. So.
Yeah, I'm putting him through my own culinary school right now on the truck.
So
that's the best way to do it. Hands on.
Best way to learn.
And, you know, Gene actually used to teach students in a culinary school as well.
Which school?
I was in a high school vocational program. And I did a little at the restaurant school and I did some different drug programs here or there throughout the years, but I was high school culinary. I started in Philadelphia at Swenson and then moved up into Bucks County and then ended up back at Bach High School in South Philly before it closed. So
wonderful. We're actually looking into trying to see if we can hire a high school culinary student from one of the vo-techs near us.
It's always a good thing to do if you could do that and work with them and help them do part of their apprenticeship program and all that. It's great.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, since you are going live across the globe and on, you know, the radio waves within your community, anybody who's a listener out there, if you know somebody who's a student, like, feel free to reach out to our guest. But back to you guys and back to Doghouse Grill. How did you come about, like, orchestrating this? Like, how did this, you know, turn into a thing? Because it seems like it's both of you with both your dads.
Yes. Yeah, it's kind of crazy how it all happened. So at the time, probably about a year ago, I was a sergeant in Philly PD in the city. And Eric is opening a cidery with his father. They used to own a pest control company, which was the Old Country Kitchen in Elmer, which is kind of like a diner staple. They bought that building for the pest control and they ended up selling the pest control business and getting into the cider business. And then he called me up and brought me on board. And, you know, there was a plan for them to open a food truck because in Jersey, unfortunately, they do not let you serve food at a brewery's. So the workaround with that is, you know, having a food truck near the premises. So we, you know, that's where I came in to help open up the food truck portion of it. And because Sirius Brewing Company is named after Eric's dog, we decided to loosely tie the truck to as Doghouse Grill. And the name actually came first. So we thought about that. We're like, oh, that sounds like a great name. What do we do? And I'm like, obviously hot dogs. Couldn't think of anything else. So it went that far. I needed to get my dad involved because I wanted him to help with, you know, some of the payment of the truck. Plus, you know, I he's retired now, so I needed to get him into something. And that's how I brought my dad on board. So it ended up being like a father-son duo thing. And now I got him on at breakfast and Eric's dad on at lunch.
So it's 100% a family thing because you incorporated everybody, including the four-legged fur baby.
Yes, absolutely.
So I want to also mention the fact that these aren't just like your run of the mill hot dogs where, you know, go in and it's just a hot dog, you know, plopped in a bun and you put ketchup or whatever mustard, your choice, or relish. That you guys actually have artisanal hot dogs.
Yes. Sorry, go ahead.
No, and I was like, and also smash burgers too.
Yeah. The hot dog thing, I don't think I can do anything without like going to the extreme. So I thought I got to make hot dogs myself from scratch, you know, learn the process and then go all out. But it ended up being beneficial to us because you can really turn anything into a hot dog. You know, like you can, you know, we use cellulose casing, so you can stuff anything in there and you can get real creative with it. You know, so any cuisine that you really want, any nationality, you know, you can do Mexican, you can do, you know, Asian, you can do Indian, you can really do anything on a hot dog and get crazy with it. So, you know, we got real excited about that.
I'm sure that, you know, you and all of your the people that have tried out your foods are excited about that. I know that Gene has a history with hot dogs or something related to hot dogs where he wears a shirt that says a lot. But he
wow, that was a big stretch, but okay.
tell me more.
there's a shirt that he wears or a sign that he had out that was kind of funny during LGBTQ pride parade. And so
I let a good friend of mine owns a very large food truck business and he's in South Jersey. So one of the things we were very big sponsors of Outfest and Gay Pride. And as being a sponsor, we got to kind of pick our truck that nobody else could duplicate. So we chose to do Italian, but sausage and meatballs and, you know, things like that. And, you know, we generated a very big sign that said, you know, 9-inch Italian sausage, I'd give you more of it. Handle it. And you know, it was amazing the comments that we would get and the people that would come to the truck and say, what do you mean I can't handle it, and, you know, so on and so forth. So just became a lot of fun. So
it's that's actually a great marketing.
Yeah, absolutely, it was a great thing, you know, and it's a great event. So, you know,
unfortunately we're only 6.5 inches with our hot dogs, but sometimes 7, it depends on
I'm sorry. that was a stretch on my part, but you know.
There you go. You just said it all. So okay, now before we all get letters from the FCC, let's go back to where we were.
Yes. I apologize. So outside of the hot dogs that you guys offer, which I have to say you get very, very creative, and yes, you don't do things just like on a low level. You do it on a bigger level. I saw on your Instagram and I had commented and you guys replied.
Yes.
And the draw of the, what was it? The not, what was that hot
the
dog?
Not worst.
Yeah, the not worst. The draw of it for me was the fact that you beer braised the onions.
Yes.
I mean, I was like, why haven't I done that?
It's delicious. I may have gone overboard because I do a lot of stuff on the truck. We cook with beer, and we do our kraut with beer as well. But I wanted that hot dog to have more of a German feel to it. But at the same time, we're not doing bratwurst. So they're not sausages. So that's where the term knotwurst came in, because it's not a bratwurst, but it's still got like the German, you know, German feel to it. And I want to incorporate beer specifically because of the brewery, because eventually when the brewery does open, I'd love to use Sirius Brewing Company's beer in some of our recipes and kind of tie them together. And then, you know, be able to do beer pairings with the food and whatnot.
Well, that's a great way to go. As somebody who is actually in the brewery business, we incorporate beer into a lot of our items. We do we obviously do a beer cheese that we make, and then we use it in our onion soup as well. And we also do, we have a cinnamon whiskey cider that we make as well. And I make cider donuts with that as well. It's really good too. And that's kind of our, the cinnamon whiskey cider is one of our signature products. But yeah, you know, when you can incorporate those signature beers or, you know, ciders or whatever you're making into it, it's such a great natural thing to get people to do that. And you really do taste it. You can, you know, then have a beer and wow, yeah, okay, I get this, you know, it's such a good thing. And I think a good beer cheese with you guys made from, you know, your beer there will be a natural, you know, big hit.
Yeah, like a Welsh rarebit kind of thing.
Yep. Yeah. We use it. We actually put it on our cheesesteaks. We use it on a burger. We use it as a cheese sauce for fries. I even incorporated it into our nachos. So, we use it in a lot of different places. We take a variation of it. We can spice it up a little bit, but yeah, it's a great base.
Yeah, we definitely want to incorporate those things and then also kind of expand our menu. You know, we do specialize in hot dogs, but being Doghouse Grill, like I want to be able to do more than that, just so, you know, things don't get stale and people don't get sick of hot dogs all the time. You know, that's why we added the Smash Burger come January. I want to expand that, you know, and we'll be adding beignets as well.
Well, you know, just as a side note, what I discovered this year during football season, we do a pizza. We do it a game day, called a game day pizza, and it's very slicely or thinly sliced hot dogs on the pizza as well. It's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. It is absolutely phenomenal. It sounds terrible. It is delicious.
It's amazing what how versatile you can be with hot dogs. I actually had a customer come up to me the other day, and he ordered one of our hot dogs on DoorDash, and he's just like, I took the hot dog out of the bun and this guy, he's had our hot dogs like tons of times. He's a real regular. And he's like, I cut it up and I put it in baked beans. It was amazing. He's like, you should put that on the menu. And I'm like, it's actually not a bad thought.
I mean, it's a classic, baked beans and hot dogs.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about your smash burgers too.
Yeah. So our smash burgers, 2 4-ounce patties, char grilled. And then I wanted it to be similar to a Big Mac, but elevated a little bit. So we have a special sauce that is, similar, but not exactly the same. And, you know, we put bacon, lettuce, tomato, and it static as a smash burger now, but I do want to, use 8-ounce patties and temp them. Because I'd be impressed if somebody came to a food truck and ordered a burger and they're like, well, how do you want that cooked? You know? So eventually we are gonna add an option to get 8-ounce patties and get it medium rare, medium, that kind of thing.
I mean, which is good. Now I'm gonna circle back to the beignets, because you said that they're not on your menu yet, but like the beignets, like it's a very, you can have them for breakfast. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's your plan, because I do know that you have breakfast available.
Yes.
Do you ever do like a hangover burger for breakfast?
No, but that's a really good idea. Yeah, that, now that you have said that, I think that's something we might have to do. That and I wanted to do a breakfast hot dog. You know, do your basic breakfast sausage, but turn it into a hot dog, and then, you know, do a fried egg on top, some bacon, melted cheese kind of thing. So we could have a hangover burger, we could have a hangover hot dog. Sky's the limit. Yeah, but we kind of fell into it. Was I wouldn't say it was a formulated plan, but we definitely fell into a lot of things, you know, with the beignets. We just started doing lattes, you know, with like the art on top. And as far as breakfast is concerned, there's definitely a lot of things that are expanding.
Well, I think Gene is one of my fellow coffee drinkers. So Gene, would you stop in for a latte?
Yeah, actually I would. It's just different and I like different. So I'm certainly going to do that. And you know, breakfast proteins, yeah, to venture out a little bit. As I said, you know, I know a little bit about that. We do brunch, you know, at our place, the brewery, and brunch is a huge thing. So, you know, being able to do that and incorporate, and, you know, we incorporate a burger. We have a breakfast burger. We love putting eggs on things. We do a great roast pork sandwich that has a fried egg on it as well. So, you know, anytime you can, you know, incorporate different proteins, and hot dogs are just such a natural thing. And obviously you're doing much more than hot dogs. You're doing sausages, you're doing, you know, knockwurst or bratwurst style things. So, you know, there's a lot going on there, which just makes me want to come out and try that, because I absolutely love that.
Yeah, we'd love to have you.
And also to try it when you guys get the brewery up and running as well, because that you have a projected date like in the future. So you have a lot of different things kind of going on all at once.
Yes. Yeah. It's definitely overwhelming. We actually, we want to open up a second truck too, you know, if we're able to, and do another, you know, type of cuisine, and just so I don't know, you know, if one truck's going to be able to handle the demand of the brewery. So we might have to venture out, get another one.
I mean, you could always try your hand at doing the brick oven fire roasted food truck, like where they have the actual kiln kind of thing on the truck.
Yeah, we actually saw one on auction recently, and we were tempted. We were looking at the price go up, and we're like, "Can we do this right now?" Yeah, there's a lot of pizza places in the area. Oddly enough, I think a lot of the feedback we've been getting is people want Chinese food. So we were thinking about maybe opening up a Chinese food truck and calling it Doghouse Walk or something like that, and, you know, just trying to get as authentic as possible without, you know, actually having lived there, you know, studied that cuisine. So it'd be a challenge.
It would be a challenge, but probably a fun one.
Oh, absolutely. That'd be a blast.
I mean, and you could always go around to the, because there are food trucks that offer that, like I think Walk and Roll or something to that matter is one of the food trucks. You can go to one of theirs and taste it. I'm sure, you know, there's a family of food truck and foodies that you've incorporated into your lives at this point. So
I'd love to do some market research for sure.
Yeah. I mean, trying out food is never like a hard thing.
I'll twist my arm.
Yeah, right, exactly. So we unfortunately are running down low on time, but for our listeners out there that would like to visit you, what are your hours of operation and where can they find you?
So currently we are located at 369 Harding Highway on Route 40 in Elmer, New Jersey, or Pittsgrove. And that is the old, the parking lot of the old Country Kitchen. Our hours are 7 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. However, Saturday, January 6th, we will be opening Saturday nights until 8 and Friday nights until 8. So we're expanding our hours a little bit just to reach people who haven't had a chance to come and try our food yet because they work and whatnot. We plan on being there long term. We might do events here and there, and in which case we'll notify everyone that we won't be there. But that's where we are.
Well, I look forward to trying out one of your hot dogs in particular, then not worse.
Yes. Yes. Please come for a hot dog, and I will make you a latte with the special art on top and nice and pretty.
Thank you. And I'll take nice pictures of it, and not you can join us.
Yes, you are a food photographer. I did learn that.
Oh, you did your research too.
I did.
All right. Well, thank you on behalf of Food Farms and Chefs for joining us on the show.
Gentlemen, good luck. If there's anything I could ever do for you in kind of some guidance for the food truck or the brewery, I know a lot about both, actually. It's been a good part of my career in both aspects, but so.
Yes, please. We would love to talk to you. We're definitely open to, learning as much as possible.
Yeah. It's great. I enjoyed the brewery aspect of it, and certainly love the food truck aspect, but glad to be away from that now. So
yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us on Food Farms and Chefs, and we will be back every single week with a brand new episode. Although we are taking a break for Christmas, so happy holidays, everyone.
To listen to the rest of Food Farms and Chefs, tune your HD radio to 97.5 WPEN HD2 or stream live from WWDBAM.com.